Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Eternal Empire by Torsten Weitzer, translated by Tim Casey, narrated by Gilda Jackson. Chapter 1. Aaron sighed contentedly. He gazed at the grassy plains spread out before them. Above the couple was a blanket of feathery clouds. Here and there the sun would break through the powdery whiteness, creating patterns of molten gold that moved gently along the landscape, while Kara and he rested under the sweeping branches of a large apple tree. The air was filled with the scents of nature, the smells of early spring so comfortingly familiar that Aaron had to smile before breathing in the aromas again, holding his breath, and then breathing out again, quietly. The peaceful surroundings were as deceptive as Aaron's gentle sighs. The sound of his breath was harmless, yet it revealed the dilemma that the paladin found himself in. He had hurried away in the dead of night with the love of his life, Kara, so that they could slip unnoticed into the Eternal Empire. Their desperate intent was to enlist the aid of its ruler, Kinwa, who was a paladin and an ancient. Both her own fighting qualities and the enormous armies of her great empire were needed to staunch the flood of Dark Ones who were streaming out of the Dark God's newly created Pall Cloud. The Empress, however, was feuding with her fellow ancients, while simultaneously waging war against the Sun Plains, and had cast a magical protective spell, which had left Aaron and Kara with no other option but to embark on this daring mission alone. It was said that Kinwa could sense, thanks to a charm net she had cast, anyone wearing deep steel or magical accoutrement, as well as any paladin or ancient known to her, at least if Aaron was to believe what the first had secretly related to him. The man whom everyone called the first was that age-old paladin whom the gods had created countless centuries earlier, before all the other champions of the gods. Kara and Aaron had left behind their unsuspecting friends and magical armor so that they could enter the enormous empire surreptitiously. Aaron let out another sigh. He missed the others and asked himself for the 100th time if he shouldn't have brought at least one more companion with them. Falk, his crotchety ex-teacher, would have been out of the question, of course, being a paladin well known to the Empress. And as Kinwa tolerated neither magic nor paladins in her empire, Falk's inevitable discovery through her charm net would have led to his immediate arrest. The same applied to Uldini and Jelnin Nolan, the two ancients whose magical powers would have betrayed them as soon as they touched the Empress's sorcerous web. Aaron sighed again. Perhaps Trogodon, the loyal dwarf and master blacksmith, could have accompanied them, but that would have meant the squat warrior travelling into a potentially hostile empire without his chainmail and hammer, both made from deep steel, into a land where dwarves were rarely seen and therefore all too conspicuous, and that on a journey where discretion would be of paramount importance. Aaron instinctively clenched a fist, for his thoughts had now led him to the companion that he missed the most. Cullen, his loyal wolf, his soul animal, and his best friend. But an ice wolf, 2 paces tall, would have attracted even more attention than a dwarf, and so Cullen, too, had to remain behind. Man and beast had now been separated from each other for 5 weeks, longer than any period since they had first found each other. And now that the wolf was not with him, Aaron sensed how much the animal had influenced him for the better. The wolf cheered him up when he was depressed. He scolded the young man whenever he was feeling sorry for himself, and he helped him in thought and deed on the occasions that Aaron didn't know what to do next. The rest of the time Cullen was a vain and greedy wolf, not to mention a right pain in the neck. Aaron chuckled quietly. The paladin loved his animal all the more for his little flaws. The young man heard a quiet sigh and looked down onto his lap. Kara was turning in her sleep, pushing her head into his stomach. The fine lines on her face betrayed the changing emotions of a dream, and Aaron recognized pain, fear, and loneliness, all of which seemed to suggest a macabre game of catch-me-if-you-can being played out in her head. Aaron placed his hand on her forehead and made a quiet, reassuring sound, which seemed to do the trick. Kara settled down and slept on, her face still anxious but free of naked terror. Aaron looked up at the heavens, wishing again that his friend were with them. Kara was still weighed down by her memories of living with the lost tribe, who had been condemned by the adversary to a life in the depths of the Cutlass Sea. Thanks to Kara's bravery, Aaron and his friends had been able to break the curse and release the poor souls from their suffering under the yoke of the Dark God. But the price had been high. Following Kara's own rescue, she had remained firmly in the void for the duration of their military campaign in Hjalgar. The void was that meditative state in which one could act completely freely from emotion. In that way, she had fled from the painful memories of her life under the sea. It was only the prospect of Aaron heading for the Eternal Empire on his own that had lured her out of that mental state. And day by day, the young woman was healing in Aaron's protective arms. Every night, they would stay awake until late, and she would relate her experiences of her life beneath the waves, of how she and her fellow sufferers would ambush other seafarers, pulling them down into the depths, where they would afflict them with the curse of the lost tribe, urged on by the incessant voice of the adversary in their heads. She hardly slept now, and when she did, only fitfully, the darkness of the night reminding her of the inky ocean depths. Therefore, Aaron had established a pattern whereby they would have a long rest in the middle of the day, so that Kara could make up for her lost sleep in as peaceful and sunny a location as possible, while he would keep watch. This tactic had worked surprisingly well, although Aaron would have preferred, if Jelni Nolan was with them, providing her own inimitable healing help. The priestess always found the right words to strengthen the spiritual well-being of her friends and companions, whether in the form of some simple good advice or a severe scolding. Aaron sighed again. His thoughts were constantly going around in circles. He missed his friends. That was all there was to it. Cullen was frustrated and bored. His carefully thought-out plan of him and his companions coming to Aaron's and Kara's aid and infiltrating the Eternal Empire together had failed spectacularly. He had given the pair a head start of 4 weeks before telling the others, so that they could rush to the young couple's assistance without fear of the companions stopping them before they could reach Quinoa's empire. It had all seemed so simple in Cullen's head. He would lead the others by following Aaron's fading scent. Uldini and Jelna Nolan would come up with some ingenious spell or other, enabling them to whoosh, unbeknownst, pass Quinoa's charm net, and then they would catch up with Aaron and Kara before tracking down the Empress together, persuading her to abandon her war against the Sun Plains and getting her to command her armies to fight against the Dark Ones who were streaming out of the Pall Cloud. Unfortunately, Cullen had underestimated both the magical hurdles facing them and the cunning of his friend. Aaron and Kara had embarked on a devious course, bamboozling the wolf's nose and making it impossible for him and his companions to follow the pair on horseback. Aaron's scent led across racing rapids, stinking bogs and dense undergrowth, while every so often the young paladin had scattered sneeze root in his wake. Cullen whined as he remembered how he had sat there like a young whelp succumbing to one sneezing fit after another. He was going to have serious words with Aaron over this ploy once they were together again. No doubt about it. The voices of his fellow travellers suddenly grew louder and more heated. They had been debating and arguing around the campfire on how best to proceed. He pricked up his ears to listen more closely.
"What an extraordinary discovery!" thundered Falk sarcastically, waving his arm at the green plains before them. "Your brilliant magic is telling us that Aaron and Kara are heading in the direction of the Eternal Empire," he fumed, his voice dripping with scorn. "Now we know so much more. Isn't it great that we have such a clever ancient in our midst?"
Cullen could clearly see the vein on Falk's forehead pulsing angrily, the same way it had done when Aaron, a young apprentice forest guardian at the time, had displeased his then-master because of some foolishness or other. Cullen was very fond of the crotchety old man. His firm, sometimes proud or even explosive manner, together with his tightly cut grey hair, his beard, his broad shoulders, and his piercing grey eyes, made him an alpha among men. If Falk was no wolf, he wasn't too far off from being one, and Cullen was far-sighted enough to realize that no one was perfect, apart from himself, of course. The campfire around which they were sitting and eating their supper in the setting sun suddenly flamed brightly. Cullen, momentarily blinded, squinted his eyes in annoyance before glaring angrily at the cause of this trick of the light. Uldini, the first of the ancients, that group of superior magicians who had discovered the secret of agelessness for themselves, was sitting on the other side of the fire, staring furiously at Falk over the crystal ball that was floating a finger's breadth above the magus's opened right palm. Ever since the arch-wizard had bound himself spiritually to the orb in an act of desperation and given it the name Flame Star, the boy-like figure's emotional changes had been accompanied by unintentional lighting effects. He still hadn't quite mastered the fundamentals of sun magic, which didn't exactly make the moody magician any more affable. For many moons, Cullen hadn't been able to take seriously the dark-skinned, bald, pated boy who looked 10 winters old. But over time, he had changed his opinion of Uldini. He regarded the arch-wizard as a force of nature, like a tornado or a winter storm. Best to keep one's distance whenever the ancient let loose his powers. He tilted his head and ruminated. Now that he thought of it, he himself had survived every winter storm unscathed up until now. He turned his attention to the argument again, which was continuing, unabated.
"I've told you already that my magic only extends to identifying their direction and the distance the pair are from us," snarled Uldini angrily. "They are still 2 weeks ahead of us, so we have a lot of catching up to do."
"I've taught the lad too well," snorted Falk as he tossed the remains of his stew into the still blazing fire.
"I take it, then, that you are no longer hungry?" asked Jelmy Nolan, her eyebrows raised disapprovingly. "Because if you're going to treat the meals that I have prepared for you like that, well, you can, by all means, go sing for your supper somewhere else."
Cullen licked his chops and gave a wolfish grin, while Falk looked at the woman guiltily. The elf looked completely at ease as she sat by the fire and polished her storm fiddle, but her tone of voice had been icy. If Uldini was a force of nature, then as far as Cullen was considered, Jelmy Nolan was practically a goddess. The elf was a high priestess of She Who Feels, the goddess who protected all animals and elves, and who presented the paladins with their soul animals. Cullen's razor-sharp mind and his extraordinary good looks were, he decided, thanks in no small measure to the goddess. He was happy to show his gratitude to one of the goddess's mightiest servants, and anyway nobody could tickle his tummy quite like Jelny Nolan. Falk abruptly stood up from the campfire and walked down the small hill upon which they had set up camp for the night. Cullen could understand the man's frustration. Indeed, he felt more and more like that himself with every day that passed. If it wasn't Aaron's little tricks that slowed them down, then it was a message that a horseman would bring concerning the latest news from the Pall Cloud, or a Rillon magically flying through the air to them with reports, or dark ones that were making the land more dangerous by the day. It was clear that Aaron and Kara were not taking a direct course to the Eternal Empire. They had first marched determinately southwards, but then taken a peculiar route, curving close to the front, around the Pall Cloud and towards the Forest of Ire, which meant that the paladins and ancients, being so close to the defensive line, were being constantly assailed with news from the eastern armies.
"Have you read this?"
asked a deep voice from close to the fire, with none of the laughter normally associated with it. Trogodon was fanning a piece of parchment that a messenger had pressed into his hand earlier that evening. There was a look of concern on the face of the normally cheerful dwarf, the light from the fire accentuating the wrinkles on his face, which was otherwise covered by a stone-grey, elaborately plaited beard. His chain mail glittered bluish as he leaned sideways, passing the report to Uldini, who had shaken his head. The parchment told of the latest developments on the front encircling the Pall Cloud. Cullen tilted his head again. Trogodon was such a down-to-earth presence, and completely dependable if you were in trouble. He reminded Cullen of a movable wolf's lair. It didn't matter what situation you were in, if you were near Trogodon, you knew you were safe and sound. The fact that the dwarf also wore his heart on his sleeve was another reason for liking him. And Cullen had to admit that the squat warrior was almost as good at fighting as the wolf himself was.
"Show me!"
said Uldini, taking the parchment from Trogodon. The archwizard cursed under his breath as his eyes scanned the text. He glanced at the dwarf, who shook his head grimly. Then Uldini examined the war report in more detail.
"The numbers are hardly going to improve by looking at them twice, believe me,"
said Trogodon, looking into the flames flickering up towards the darkening evening sky, and now only half the strength that they had been. "Leave the fire alone now," chided Jelna Nolan, looking down at her magical instrument, which she was still polishing intently. "I can hardly see anything here. You're worse than an apprentice wizard on his first day of training." Uldini blinked, and the campfire flared back into life. "Apologies," he said through gritted teeth. "My connection to Flamestar is growing stronger by the day, but somehow my magic keeps leaking out through the orb without me noticing." He passed the report over to her. "Read this instead," he added tersely. Jelny Nolan shook her head. "Such dreadful news of death and destruction should be given face to face," she said solemnly. "Writing it down like that makes the facts seem so cooled." Cullen growled appreciatively. Elves, he believed, were still very close to nature in the animal kingdom and had preserved that intelligence which most of the civilized peoples of Jurath had long since lost. Uldini cleared his throat uneasily and pointed to the parchment in his hand. "According to this, our losses are heavy. We were able to close the circle in the southeast and north, but with the large number of Dark Ones trying repeatedly to break through our lines, simply too many soldiers are dying." He looked deeply into Jelny Nolan's eyes. "It is also reported that any wounded Dark Ones who have managed to retreat into the smoke of the Pall Cloud are recovering at a much faster rate. Jelna Nolan drew in her breath sharply. The adversary is healing his creations? Such a thing has never happened before. Cullen could smell the sudden fear in the air, and he adjusted his position anxiously on the grass as he continued to listen. All of his tactics are new, said Aldini, shoving the parchment under a fold in his jet-black robe. Cullen knew that the arch-wizard tried to lend himself more authority by wearing this garment, but the wolf was convinced that a radiant white would be far more effective. After all, his own fur was white when it came down to it. But then again, he was an impressive ice-wolf, 2 paces tall. Pleased with himself, Cullen quietly licked his chops, his head down on the grass between his paws. We still don't know exactly how the pool cloud works, or how he who forces is ensuring that it's spreading outwards all the time. Sleeps in treetop, and the other ancients are coordinating their efforts in an attempt to keep the cloud in check, but without success thus far. All we know is that anyone who comes into contact with the smoke from the cloud, be they human or animal, immediately falls under the control of the Dark God, while elves and dwarves die within a single heartbeat. And now the cloud also seems able to speed up the recovery of Dark Ones. Aldini shook his head again. The adversary had centuries to come up with a strategy for his return, and it seems he has been very successful in this regard. He knew that we were going to surround him. After all, the charm pillar is the center of Jorath. But now he has created a death zone by means of the pall cloud, which is growing like a fresh ink stain on a linen cloth. He may be able to push us away from the edge of the borderlands by the summer after next, at the latest.
Can't you or Jelna Nolan assist in halting the pall cloud's progress? Asked Trogodon, hopefully.
The two ancients stared at each other before shrugging their shoulders.
Perhaps, said the elf after a pause, but to do so we would need to study the cloud for weeks, if not moons. Do you think that that's advisable at this time?
Cullen raised his head and looked anxiously towards the fire. If the two ancients were to turn their attention to the pall cloud, their chances of locating Arran in the Eternal Empire would disappear faster than a joint of roast meat within the wolf's reach. He really didn't like the direction this discussion was taking. Then Trogodon shook his head with such force that the warrior's plaits scraped across his chain mail. Cullen doubted that the others had picked up on the noise at all, but of course none of them had the excellent hearing that the Ice Wolf had.
We're not going to abandon Arran to the mess he's managed to manoeuvre himself into, said the dwarf, folding his arms deliberately.
Then we are agreed, confirmed Jelna Nolan. We are going to follow Arran to the border and try to finagle our way through Kinwar's charm net somehow. And if we don't succeed, then we'll make such a racket that we'll draw the Eternal Empress's attention to us and us alone. Let's bring Falk back to the campfire and tell him the news of the pall cloud. He's become even touchier than usual, said Aldini.
All of us are concerned about the young pair, muttered Trogodon. He really needs to realize that he's not the only one.
Cullen stood up and stretched his limbs. Then he woofed quietly towards the campfire before trotting down the hill to Falk, who was conversing silently with Selcina on a meadow and staring towards the west.
Cullen is doing it for us, he heard Aldini whispering from the campfire. The poor wolf seems to be suffering the most at the fact that Arran and Kara left us all behind.
Cullen snorted. Arran hadn't left him behind. The wolf had let his friend go on without them.
A pretty big difference, even if a little voice inside the wolf's head was reminding him that Arran hadn't realized that his wolf had overheard the young man's conversation with the first and knew exactly what was going on.
He reached Falk and Selcina, where he positioned himself beside the Titijunanwa who was now hardly a finger's width taller than Cullen. The wolf had been really looking forward to eventually towering over the elven charger, but a mean twist of fate had halted his growth at the last moment. He barked at Selcina and pointed his nose towards the campfire. Even if true understanding between the two soul animals was only possible when the rock, Sunshimmer, was present, or at least Kasoba, the monkey, with his wild gestures, the wolf and the unicorn comprehended each other sufficiently for her to understand what he was saying and to convey it to the old man.
"I should go back to them?" asked Falk, looking at Cullen.
Cullen nodded briefly, and Falk walked back up the hill with a frown. Cullen stayed standing beside Selcina, and the pair looked towards the west as the night continued to draw in. The air was full of the delights of springtime, and Cullen could hear a myriad of mice and rabbits in the high grasses before them, while he tried peering towards the horizon through the little forest ahead. The first stars were playing hide-and-seek and peeking out from behind the dispersing clouds. Selcina whinnied softly, and a wave of compassion radiated from her to the wolf. She was blessed with the gift of receiving and transmitting feelings. Cullen whined gently and gratefully rubbed his head against her neck, a gesture which she returned. He missed Aran terribly. His only comfort was that he knew his friend was not completely alone.
"Have you any idea of where we are?" asked Kara wearily. "I've completely lost any sense of direction."
Aran turned and looked back, a pointless gesture, as he led her through yet another river. Then he scattered the last of his sneeze root on the bank. The only thing he could see in this little forest were trees, wherever he looked. No landmarks at all by which they could orientate themselves.
"We are roughly 10 leagues south of the Pall Cloud, so long as it isn't growing at a faster rate since we started," he said, pointing northwards.
He was glad, now that they were travelling so close to the forest, for the menacing, dark, sulphurous formation was, currently, invisible to them.
"So another couple of days until we reach the Forest of Aya," said Kara.
Aran responded with a nod, giving her a quick peck on her cheek. Their plan was to follow the southern outskirts of the forest and thereby circumnavigate the front between the Sun Plains and the Eternal Empire. The area on the edge of the Forest of Aya was firmly under the control of the Wrath Elves, who had made it violently clear to all and sundry many centuries earlier that anyone who came within view of the forest would be considered an enemy. Aran, however, had befriended one of these eccentric elves who had made their homes in this inhospitable forest during the last conclave, and so he hoped that they would permit Kara and him to pass through. Taking this route was a risk, and not only for the obvious reasons. The area close to the Pall Cloud was teeming with Dark Ones who had evaded the ring of soldiers circling the cloud, or who had answered the call of the Dark God and were approaching the centre from all corners of Jurath so that they could attack the defenders from behind. Aran had heard rumours from the south concerning a swarm of sickle hoppers that had been able to form despite the best efforts of the Sun Legions and which were now moving slowly northwards. Aran clenched his fist as he thought about it. If the Sun Emperor, Justinian III, had not been forced to position half of his army in the west to fight a pointless war against the Eternal Empire, the sickle hoppers would undoubtedly have been stopped in their tracks before they had formed into a battle swarm. He cursed under his breath. This was precisely the reason why he and Kara were on their way to Kinwa, to put a stop to the bloodletting between the two powers and to at last create a combined front against the awakening Dark God, who was threatening them all from the heart of Jurath. Aran slipped on a wet stone, nearly tumbling off the river bank and into the water, but he was saved in the nick of time by Kara's lightning reflexes. He half hung there,
in her arms, and for a moment her eyes flashed impishly at him.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?